is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
See Live Off the Record with Trivago Lang is brought to you by Bahamas First General Insurance Company, Bahamar, City of Hope, Prince Masters, IRF Bank and Trust Plaza, and Star General Insurance Made Simple.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Trivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call on the show today, the numbers remain the same. You can call us on 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow, channel 612. So let me give you the lay of the land today. For the first hour, I'm speaking with some special guests from the Securities Commission. It's Investor Week, and so we're going to talk to them about that. And in the second hour, man, I have a big tourism question for you. Yeah, big tourism question. So stay tuned. All right. We have with us today from the Securities Commission, Madam Ward. I do not want to accept your good name your parents gave you. She's the Senior Manager of Enforcement at the Securities Commission. And we have Mr. Benson Russell, who's the Assistant Manager of Enforcement. We've had them both here before. I'm so sorry. Look at me. I'm like way ahead of the game. Let's take a break, producer, and then let me come back. After this break.
Take a stand. Everybody. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together. Storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Boost your buying power with a margin loan at rates as low as 7.5%. A margin loan offers convenient flexibility in your investments. Whether you're looking to diversify, fund a business opportunity, or refinance higher cost debt, RF provides access to cash within 48 hours for any purpose. Tailored, effortless, powerful. Discover how a margin loan can work for you. Visit rfgroup.com or call 603-6000. RF Bank and Trust. Money. At work.
As a healthcare professional, you dedicate your life to caring for others. But even with the best care, legal challenges can arise. Protect your practice and your peace of mind with medical malpractice insurance from Star General. At Star General, we've partnered with Lloyd's of London to bring you comprehensive professional liability insurance designed specifically for those consulting or practicing privately. Visit our website today so you can focus on what you do best, caring for your patients, while we take care of the rest. Star General, insurance made simple.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon where I'm living all the way in October 9th. So you already got your October 9th introduction to the Securities Commission that we're going to be hosting then. But today I have in this half of the show, a exciting guest to speak with. We in the Bahamas see a lot of things going on in the world. We hear about drug development, the various phases that drugs have to go through in the United States of America, as an example, until they are finally approved and by the drug administration there. And then we get to have these drugs here in the Bahamas dispensed by our pharmacies, by the doctors and so forth. And we see a lot of that, and we see that from a great distance. Well, my guest today is a pharmaceutical professional with over 10 years of experience guiding drug development across a diverse set of therapeutical modalities, from small molecules to advanced biologics. Her career has given her hands-on insight into clinical trials, regulatory science, operational efficiency, and strategic execution in the process of these the development of drugs. Alongside her technical expertise, she's developed strengths in project management, process improvement, and adult learning principles. And I came across this young, professional, experienced Bahamian by virtue of her father, and I was happy that he introduced me to her resume so that we could have a conversation with her around this, the whole pharmaceutical drug development and some other things she's doing to bring her own experience and expertise to bear on the lives of people here, young people here in the Bahamas. I have with me today Dr. Nicole Morris. Welcome, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you for the introduction, Shivago. It's a pleasure to be here.
No, thank you for joining us today. I mean, Dr. Morris has educated herself through the University of Iowa, Miami. She's got many professional certifications, and I'm happy to have you here today.
Yeah.
Because there are so many things we could talk about. Again, correct. Welcome.
Thank you.
And by the way, did I mention she's Bahamian, right?
You did at the end, but don't worry, if you hadn't, I would have let everybody know, and I'm a Bahamian.
There you go. So first of all, let's talk about your journey. I mean, you were born on which of these islands in the Bahamas now?
New Providence. Yeah.
Okay. I don't want no wars happening because, you know, when we accomplish things, people just own us, you know. So next thing I know, you from Cat Island or from Grand Bahama or something like that. But you're New Providence born.
Yes.
Like me.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, okay. Correct. And then your early education would have been where?
Temple Christian. I went there from pre-K all the way to grade 12. So, yeah.
Okay, go Suns. Okay. And I tell, see, so in no SAC or QC, that argument, because Temple Christian is a, well, I knew it used to be affiliated with the Assemblies of God at one point, with Evangelistic Temple.
Yeah.
Evangelistic Temple, Assemblies of God Church. And you navigated entirely through Temple Christian?
I did. And we could have that conversation about SAC, but another time, because I also played sports, so you know.
Okay. All right. And then you went on from Temple Christian to?
I went to University of Miami, and that's where I did my bachelor's in molecular biology. And then from there, I went to University of Iowa and got a PhD in pharmaceutical sciences.
Okay, so why pharmaceutical sciences?
Well, because I thought I wanted to be a medical doctor, and then I didn't after doing one summer rotation at PMH. And research was very exciting to me at the time. It works your brain differently. And so I was at Iowa when I made this decision and happened upon an advisor that introduced me to this whole new field that was called pharmaceutical sciences. It wasn't anything I knew about, nothing I ever thought about, but it was just so exciting to be that close and at the forefront of getting drugs to the market.
I'm glad to hear you say research does something different to your brain for real. Hey,
yes.
I mean, it is like, you know, we watch these private investigators on the television and stuff like that. And you see them trying to find out who did it. And research is very much like that. I mean, it gets you when you are looking for an answer to a question and you are following leads. It does something special to your brain.
Yes. Yes. And you and everything is new and different and exciting. Right. So it's always a new challenge.
Yep. Absolutely. So you choose this course of study and train yourself in it. And then when you graduated, what was the journey then from there?
Yeah. So one of the unique things about being in the pharmaceutical science field, and particularly in the field that I'm in, is typically people with a PhD have to do a postdoc, right? So they have to get additional training, you know, at another institution or perhaps the institution that they're in. In our field, we actually have the luxury of going straight into the field. In industry. Mm-hmm. And so I graduated with my PhD and immediately started a job at a contract research organization. So again, for this, this is probably going to be a lot of education for people because it's not a common topic that we talk about here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This is what we do on the show. Right. We educate.
Yep. So a contract research organization isn't a pharmaceutical company itself, but they work with pharmaceutical companies either as a full service, so helping them with all of their needs for bringing the drug to market or only certain parts of it. And so my role when I was there and throughout my career was to help to determine how much of a drug we should take. So the dose of the drug and then how often, which makes up the dosing regimen.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So help us understand something, because girl, I got some questions for you, because you know, after the pandemic, people lending gun to lose their mind about drugs, right?
Yes.
So I have some questions for you, but let's take us through the drug development process. So I have an idea, a drug that can address an issue. Talk to us about the very start, how that happens.
Right. So you have a point. You have a disease or an indication that you want a therapeutic treatment for. We start in early discovery. So you will say, well, we know this is how this disease works. We have a particular target of interest, and we want to see if there are drugs that can have an effect on that target. Right. So that's the start. And typically you would then do screening of compounds. So we're just talking about kind of medicinal or basic compounds or drugs or small molecules. So you might screen a whole bunch of compounds and see if you get a hit or a lead. Does this particular compound show us an effect? Now, we're not in humans at this point, so a lot of these things might be in silico, which means computer-based or computer-aided, or in vitro, meaning that it's being done in for better use of a word, in a test tube or in a laboratory setting. Once you feel like we really know what's happening here and we probably have a viable compound or a lead compound, then we will take it to the next stage, which will be animal testing, Right. And so, you know, people get skirmished with that, but it's something that we have to do because we have to make sure that the compound that we want to eventually get into humans is going to be safe. Animal species, and there are various animals that we can use depending on what we want to look at. We're looking at the toxicology, so kind of the negative side effects that the drug might have, and establishing a margin of saying, well, this is probably the highest we want to go in humans starting. And at that point, we're not really as concerned of, is the drug going to do as much? But we really need to understand the toxicity profile or the adverse profile of it. That is what we would call preclinical because we're not in the clinical stage. I can keep going?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Oh, I'm right here learning up a storm. Go right on, please.
From that point, when we're like, okay, we really understand what's happening in the preclinical, that's when we get into our early phases of clinical studies. And we often start those studies with the main exception of oncology, and I'll briefly say why, in healthy humans, right? Because you want to make sure that you're not stressing your system. And those first set of studies that we do is really just to determine if our drug is safe in humans. So we would do something that's called looking at different doses and see how high we can get on a dose, likely to see maybe if we hit toxicity or not, but it's like, okay, that's the highest that we can go in humans with the single dose. And then we also would do something similar in multiple doses. So that is the early stages of clinical trials, and that would be phase one in healthy volunteers. From there, we then start to go into our phase two, which would be our proof of concept. So now we're okay with safety, and we think that it's okay to administer this drug. Is this drug actually having the intended effect? And at that point, we are given that drug now in the disease that we're interested in, right? So these are not just healthy volunteers. These are actually people with that disease or that indication. And we want to see if we are getting the effect that we want, but we also want to make sure that we're getting a better understanding of the doses that are needed to give us that intended effect. All right. We're still collecting
bearing
some.
Bearing in mind that you have already determined that a certain level of dosage is as high as you want to go.
Right. Exactly.
From the healthy
volunteer study. Exactly.
Volunteer. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, man.
I know. You can come and work with me.
This is helpful, girl. Because I will tell you my own thought, I'm thinking you're going for effect first.
No.
But no, you're going safety. For safety first.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. And that's a great way to phrase it, right?
Lots of people don't, lots of people, I'm sure, were thinking, no, man, we're trying to figure out if it works. And by the way, it might cause this and it might cause that and the next thing. But no, you're saying to us in the process, with a healthy volunteer, you are looking at, okay, when do we get to, we can't go higher than this.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
And so then from there, so that phase two is a very small, those are very small trials, right? You might have a couple hundred people because, again, we don't want to introduce this drug in a larger population. And there are some side effects that we hadn't accounted for or seen earlier on. So once we feel very comfortable with that proof of concept stage in that small number, we continue on to what we would call a phase three. And that's going to be your large thousands of people in a trial. And that's where you're really wanting to get an understanding and refining what that dose is going to be, right? And you know, there are other types of studies that are happening in the background to determine other things as well that we won't have time to get into. But this is kind of the basic trend. So that phase three, those are going to be your pivotal studies that at the end of those, then you're getting ready for registration. So at this point, when you're at phase three, you're saying, I have enough information to prove that my drug is safe, to prove that my drug is effective, and these are the doses in which those parameters exist. So at the end of that, we're going to get either one dose or we might get certain types of banded doses depending on the results that we have, and that's what we put into a label. So at the end of all of that, what you see in the package insert is all of that information, right? when it tells you take 50 milligrams 4 times a day, all of these studies help us to inform that information to labeling. And then, the, wow. you know, you can have phase 4, which are going to be post-marketing. So another thing that people don't realize is even when a drug is on the market, we're still collecting data. Right.
Now, where is the FDA in this process?
They're in all of it. Okay.
It's
not just the FDA. So you're great. The FDA is going to be a U.S. base. You have PMDA, which is going to be Japan. You have Health Canada, that's going to be Canada. You have, they've changed their name. I'm drawing a blank. But European, the EU, the EMA, EMA, which is going to be Europe. And then UK have their branches as well, and even China. So you have all of these different regulatory agencies.
Hold on. Because I am so glad you are saying this, because, you know, we are Bahamians and we are connected to America, and that's what we know is the FDA. But you are saying, no, bro, it's not just the FDA. We got to glue the EMA and the DSAA and this, because all of them are watching, because this drug could be in all of those territories.
Yes, and they're not going to, just because a drug is approved in the FDA, in the United States by the FDA, doesn't mean that it might be approved in the EMA. We have what we call harmonization practices, where we're doing things in a way that when we're submitting a package, for the most part, we can repurpose it. But each one of them have slightly different regulations. So it's not a one size fit all. And what we're also seeing, to just go off tangent because I think it's an important point, is that other countries are coming on board, and not just what we would call, you know, our G5s or our G20. Lower and middle income countries are also saying, no, we need to have some sort of regulatory body in place, even if they're not doing full blown drug development. But if you want to bring this drug into our country, we want to make sure that we feel comfortable with what you're bringing into our country as well. So it's, this thing is not just a small little pie that does whatever. It's something to be taken serious, and other countries have their own requirements.
I am so happy you are here today and sharing this information, because it's so important. Listen, I do not begrudge people who have a healthy suspicion of any drug that's on the market, because I think that makes sense, right? We should have a healthy suspicion about anything, right?
Absolutely.
Healthy meaning, we want to ask the questions that satisfy our curiosity enough to give us the confidence we need. That's healthy. Yes. Unhealthy suspicion is, I heard something and I'm going to render a judgment. That's unhealthy suspicion.
Right.
But we have some people are have gotten very skittish about drugs now. And I have always, because of my own science background, understood the rigor of drug development. Can you talk to us about that, please? The rigor of it.
I will. And one of the things I will finish up first for you and then come back to the rigor is your question about where is the FDA involved, right? So I'm going to phrase that and say of the regulatory from the beginning to the end. So, you know, you don't always have to consult with them in the early stages, but there are means by which even when before you are you've picked your lead compound, right? We've talked about these different phases. You can go to the agency and say, hey, here's what we're thinking about. Perhaps it's a new modality. Perhaps it's a new indication that we don't have drugs available yet. This is what we're thinking. At every stage of the drug development, phase 1, phase 2, you can have meetings with the FDA. Now, sometimes they might require these meetings if they're concerned about some safety or they can put a hold, but a lot of times they have their touch points. Most companies would even meet with the agencies at the end of phase 2 because they're getting to the point where we know that we have a viable product. We want to go into the registration phase. So we want these agencies to look at the data that we have and tell us, are we doing right? Is there anything we need to be thinking about, and kind of get that preemptive feedback as you go. And then the submission process is work. Okay. So I've had several successful submissions under my belt, and it is work. Just because we submit all of the documentation to say that our drug is safe, that our drug is effective, and these are the doses that we want to give, that has to be reviewed, come back with questions. And usually when they're coming back with these questions, you're on a clock. Okay, so, you know, if they give you 120 days or 60 days, you have to come back to them and convince them that what you're saying satisfies whatever concerns they have. And as I also said, you also have post-marketing surveillance that happens as well. So even when a drug gets approved, sometimes things come up. I can think of, is it Vioxx? Where Celebrex, one of them, I think it was, pardon my knowledge is getting old, but drugs get pulled off of the market. And that's because just because it's on the market doesn't mean that we're not still monitoring. As a company.
It can't be Celebrex's. I'm taking Celebrex now.
So it must be, it's Vioxx. It's one of the Cox-2s, I think, that got pulled. I'm sorry. They're both in my mind. And he'd be like, oh, Lord, no.
Be like, oh, my God,
no.
What did you do to me?
No, that drugs, they get pulled or even drugs get repurposed or shelved and then they come back, right? So there's often, and we've talked about that when we, not to get provocative, but the blue pill, right? Blood pressure, and then they're like, oh, wait, it does other things, and here comes a completely different indication
for it.
So this is a continuous effort and a continuous monitoring.
Can I ask you a question? So from phase to phase, is there any formal approval involved by these external agencies, or is only the internal process of, okay, now we're ready for phase two?
Yeah.
Phase three. How does that work?
It's generally internal, but you can request some of these meetings that I talk about. So the FDA, really, when it comes to approval, is going to be when you submit that new drug application. That is when they are going to take their time and look at everything and say, we are going to approve this or we're not. But throughout the stages, if you are smart, you are still having those touch points with them on your what we call go-no-go decisions. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, because you got to go to them for final approval. So don't make no sense you going through all of this stuff instead of saying, you know what, here's where I am. You could take a look at this, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
Do you have any concerns, et cetera? Because as you said, that's a kind of preemptive scenario for the developer, right?
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, some of them, it's, you know, a small risk, right? And I, you know, I'm also business-minded. It's also capital. The later you get in the drug development stage, the more money is going to cost you, right?
True.
You would rather want to drop that as early as possible than go all the way into submission and they're like, no, right? So.
Yep. That makes sense. That makes good sense.
So,
all right.
So you had another question. Now I forgot what it was when we got sidetracked.
Rigor.
But was it the rigor?
The rigor. Yeah, because again, just to put it in context, I mean, you got so many people. So some of us, we're okay. We take supplements. We take natural this and natural that. None of which have been subjected to, in many instances, scientific rigor on testing and all that kind of stuff. But we believe in them. We've seen some proof of effect for some of the, even if we go back to Cerasi, our parents used to give us, right?
Right.
But, you know, people will have an ease with taking that stuff in, saying, oh, well, that's all natural, versus drugs, because they're saying now there's a suspicion. And I'm saying there is a rigor to drug testing prior to. That's how come you got get to know the effect and the side effects, right?
Yes, that is correct. So I will talk about the rigor. And you brought up an excellent point. When you said supplements, I was like, ooh, because supplements are actually not really regulated. It's on the onus of the person to say that this does what it does. And so if you're just buying it off the shelf, you don't know what the safety profile is. I think sometimes, you know, for me, supplements are in its own little group. And then you have just what I would call natural medicine, or what we call bush medicine is in its own as well, right? I drink soursop tea, you know, I drink moringa, whatever. I do think that there is some value in that, but you're absolutely correct. There's no rigor. There's no rule of body to say this is okay and this actually works, right? So, most times it's anecdotal, or we might have case studies or some other people that might do some work on it, but it's not rigorous testing. So everything within drug development is kind of pretty much defined. And you have to realize that you have multiple subject matter experts that are all involved in this decision making. And that's the rigor. I own a very small part of it, maybe 10 to 15% of what happens. That you have clinicians, you have pharmacists, you have chemists, you have biologists, you have mathematicians, you have engineers, right? So all of us are playing a very intricate role in answering key questions. And then the rigor comes from, we're going to be held with our feet to the fire when we take all of that data. So these submission packages are not small. Lots of studies, lots of reports, and then we go from the minutiae of all of those studies into, and this is the high level conclusion. All of that gets reviewed. And on top of that, you also can have audits. You know, monitoring of clinical trials is a huge thing. People don't realize the amount of effort that goes into that. If people have side effects, even if they're not tied to the drugs, those have to be reported. Those have to be investigated, right? So there's a lot of rigor that by the time a drug gets to the market, we've done our due diligence. That doesn't mean that we haven't missed anything, because you have to also realize we're playing a numbers game. We're starting small. Our phase ones might have 12 people. We get big. We might have 50,000, right? But then we have a drug, especially if it's a blockbuster drug, that's going to millions of people. So naturally, there are things that we have a numbers game in statistics. And 1% out of 10 is not as jarring as 1% out of 10 million, right?
Yeah, and you have in that 10 million population people with variations
exactly.
of their own body chemistry and biology that could be impacted by the drug
exactly.
that it wasn't taken account of in the clinical trials.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh boy, I'm so happy you're here. because this is something that gets all of us, right?
Right.
So we're watching television, and then the commercial comes on, and says, "You should try this. Good for, let's say it's good for dealing with ringing in the air, right? Let's just say, that's just something I'm saying." And then it says, side effect could cause delusion, could cause suicidal.
And death.
And so forth
and
so
death.
Forth, right? Help us put that into context as to why anybody would put on the market something that has some probability of causing those kinds of things. Well, talk to us about that, please.
So it's twofold when I look at it. It's the first one is risk versus benefit. Mm-hmm. And the second is what we have to report. So, you know, we talked about side effects and the fact that we have to monitor them. And sometimes we see things that happen, whether they are tied to the drug or not, and we have to report it because it's something that was seen as we were getting that drug through the market. So, you know, I always laugh.
So even if the probability was 1 in 66 million,
it's a probability.
You have to report it because it happened.
It happened, right? And so I laugh a lot when I see the ones that it could cause all of these things and death. And like, it's something for, and I don't want to diminish an indication, but you look at it and you say, well, I would rather just not treat that thing if death is a risk. A lot of times when we see stuff like that, it's a legality, and it's something that you have to do. It's almost more being transparent, right? You're not hiding anything.
Right.
But you have to. You have to. And like I said, we will report that we think it's likely tied to the drug or it's not. But those are things that have to be reported. So I'll get back to risk versus benefit. Sometimes we will see some side effects that are real. Right? That drug, you might have some sort of fluid retention that has to be monitored. If you take this drug, there might be a risk for liver damage. And I'm using these because these are realistic things. But
you
have cancer.
Or constipation that's associated with strong pain medication.
It's opioids. Exactly. But you have cancer. Right. And so the risk of dying versus potentially having elevated liver enzymes and maybe having to be monitored, that's where these things come in. So when you ask why would someone take a drug, it's always when you look at the risk compared with the side effects and realistic side effects. So, you know, you can go to your doctor and they'll say that's highly unlikely. But there are some of them where we do have these side effects. But the benefit of that drug is so great that it outweighs the risk of some of these things.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Oh boy. Thank you, Brother Morris. Thank you, sir. You are so, honestly, I'm not bigging your head up. You're so articulate. You are so fluent with your subject matter. You can explain it with such efficacy. This is what I love because it gives our audience an opportunity to hear information that maybe they don't get to hear too often. So yes. I told you guys that we had a second hour when we were doing something. That's on October 9th. That's not today. Today we are dealing with Dr. Morris. Today, okay? We're going to take a break, but when we come back, are you okay talking through some of the things we would have heard and dealt with during the pandemic insofar as drugs are concerned?
A little bit. I will be cautious, but yes, I think it is a conversation.
I agree. These are basic, questions I already see popping up on the text. So we'll cover some of that when we come back.
Sounds good.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm here having a marvelous conversation with Dr. Morris. And when we come back, we will continue talking with her about all of her pharmaceutical expertise and some of the things she's planning doing here and elsewhere. We'll be back after the news break.
This October, Bahama invites you to indulge your senses at the Culinary and Arts Festival, where world-class flavors meet breathtaking creativity in the heart of the Bahamas. Join us October 22nd through 26th for an unforgettable celebration featuring culinary legends Marcus Samuelson, Dario Cicchini, Simeon Hall Jr., and Scott Conant, alongside a vibrant lineup of chefs and mixologists. Explore captivating art installations, interactive workshops, and live performances, all set against the stunning backdrop of Nassau's premier luxury resort. From curated tasting events to beachfront feasts and immersive gallery experiences, this is more than a festival. It's a feast for the soul. Tickets and packages are going fast. Visit Bahamar.com to reserve your spot at the Culinary and Arts Festival at Bahamar, where taste and talent take center stage.
Southwest Plaza has so many stores, I've been trying to find a sensible way to list them all. There's CBS Bahamas, the Ashai Institute, BENC Snack World, Bamboo Shack Bahamas, City More, John Bullfine, Threads Alive, Bahari, Dairy Queen, 700 Wines and Spirits, Sandy's, Clarkson Island Luck, Starbucks and Lowe's Pharmacy, plus Marco's Pizza and Lorraine. Southwest Plaza, what a wide array of stores. Southwest Plaza, stop by today and explore.
Cancer Treatment Centers of America is now City of Hope, creating one of the leading cancer care and research networks from coast to coast, providing more of what you need. More locations means more care closer to home. More specialists means more expertise. More research means more breakthroughs. More advancements means more treatment options. And more options means more hope. Learn more at cancercenter.com.
In the face of a storm, it's not just buildings that get tested. It's all of us. Insurance isn't just about repair. It's about recovery. So when the winds die down, you're already on the path forward. Having insurance can mean the difference between starting over and starting stronger. So talk to an authorized agent or broker of Bahamas First General Insurance about how the right coverage can support you through this season and whatever comes next. With Bahamas First, you're in safe hands. In all seasons.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio. 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. So glad that you could join us. Hey, if you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so on 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316. You can also catch us on, call us on 240. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Please forgive me. You know, every now and again, I forget that these equipment we have need power, and I don't have the power plugged in, forgive me. We are here, ladies and gentlemen, speaking with the impressive pharmaceutical professional, Dr. Denise Nicole Morris. We have Dr. Morris. People have talked about how much they are learning today, and I'm grateful. Thank you for that, right?
Yes.
Appreciate it. Yes. But welcome again to Z Live.
Yes. I'm glad. One of the things is education. I think it's so important in a complex field, so it's good to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. One of the things I want to, before we go on to some nuance issues, is to make this point, to have you help us make this point. There are thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of drugs out there being used by people, no?
Yes.
Right? All having gone, the ones that are being dispensed by certified doctors and pharmacies, all having gone through this sort of process in some country, territory, or the other, right?
Yes.
Hello?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Just for a minute, you were a little muted. Yeah. So, and I think about that and think about the extent to which these drugs are such staples in the therapy of disease throughout the world, and the extent to which both in their history and in the experience of them, there is so much to find what they can do, the extent to which they can do it, and if there is, what side effects may exist from them, such that this is part of our healthcare regimen in the world, no?
Absolutely, right? So, you know, in medicine, diseases come up, we diagnose them, and then we have to treat them. So treatment is can be pharmaceutical, like you said, it could be nutraceutical, it could be natural remedies, but that's the course of action. And most of the interventions, other than, you know, say physical therapy, are going to be pharmaceutical based.
And by the way, these are not just prescription drugs, because even the drugs we have on the shelves, where we reach for an Aleve, we
OTCs.
Reach for Tylenol, we reach for these are also subject to those same kinds of rigorous testing, no?
That is correct. So we have prescription drugs, which are the ones that you mm-hmm. have to have a script from the doctor, and we have OTCs or over-the-counter, and they are subject to the same regulations. The only one that isn't, and we touched on that earlier, is going to be the ones that people feel likely most comfortable with, which are the supplements. And when we talk about supplements, you know, even your vitamin D, those are all supplements, right? They are mm-hmm. not regulated.
Mm-hmm.
by the agency, but over-the-counter drugs and prescription drugs are.
And even they have dosages attached to them.
That
the
is
the kind
correct.
Of thing that you would be involved with for respect to all of these FDA, other EA approved drugs, but
that's
they have
right.
dosages, and there's a reason for the dosages, right? So I hear people say, oh, you can take as much of these as you want, but there's a reason for the dosages, even of these supplements, no?
Supplements are a little bit harder because who knows, you know.
Like when is enough?
Right.
When is enough or too much, et cetera, right?
Right. And anything of too much is not good. But definitely, yes, when we have what we call dosing information or dosing recommendations, that is because we have done testing and we have determined it. Now, again, over time, as we do some additional testing, things might change, right? We might be able to open that up a little bit more. But there are reasons for some of these. It's because if you take too much, it can get you into the toxicity range, right? So, you know, even as simple as over-the-counter medication like, you know, Tylenol, there are restrictions. There are reasons why there's limits to the maximum amount that you can take per day. Or there's limits
right.
on why they don't want you to take something as benign as Tylenol with alcohol. Like, there are studies. And so sometimes people be like, oh, it's just over-the-counter. I don't have to abide by these things. Those recommendations are for a reason. Those recommendations are based on testing, particularly with OTCs and with prescribed medications. So do not become your own pharmacist and clinician.
Yeah, yeah. because I remember one time, I don't know who said my iron was low, right? Mm-hmm. This was when I was a younger person. And so, you start drinking triiodic or whatever else you got to drink. But I drank too much of it.
Yes.
What do you think happened to me?
Toxicity. Yeah.
Constipation.
Yeah.
All kind of nonsense because I'm overdosing.
Yes.
Right, on the supplement.
Another
that's
one.
That's what triiodic is.
Yeah.
It's a supplement.
Vitamin D is another one. And something people know, like African Americans and Black people tend to be low on vitamin D, and so we have to take supplements. Mm. But you can get almost anything. Too much is not a good thing. Right. And so you have to be careful with those things. Even sometimes when people are, taking those supplements, then you go back to the doctor and you get tested. Right. And so that's something that they will pay attention to. And it's somewhat benign. It is a supplement. You can get prescription vitamin D if you need higher dosages, but you can get it over the counter. You don't need to have a prescription. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things for me, Shivago, is kind of education and patient advocacy. That doesn't mean that I want to give you the tools to be dangerous, but I want to give you the tools to ask the right questions. And as simple as OTCs.
Mm-hmm. This text says, Mr. Lang, people were skeptical in taking the COVID-19 vaccine because they felt that it was created so quickly. Mm-hmm. What is the pharmacist's views on the vaccine and what would she tell people to allay their fears? And this is about the process, because we heard about that. People talked about the rush with which these stuff came to market and all that kind of stuff and, can you help us understand, say, something like the COVID-19 vaccines? And my understanding is COVID-19 vaccine is not the only drugs that would have been able to have these expedited processes, but can you help us with that?
Yeah, so emergency use authorization, it is a thing. Right. And sometimes we'd see it as
it's a thing, not just for COVID-19.
No.
It was always a thing.
Yes. So we see it like we did with COVID, but sometimes you also see it when there is a drug that is not being approved yet, but there are special cases where this person has no other alternative. And so we're like, can we at least try this in this way to see if it's going to be helpful? Now, what some people might not have realized, right, because they're like, oh, that happened so quickly. We've talked about all of these stages of drug development. They were not at the beginning of that stage with these drugs. So there was some information, there was some clinical data. It wasn't like, oh, we just found this thing in the lab, early stages when we talked about screening and let's just put it into humans. We would never do that. One of the things was, though, we needed emergency use. We needed to be able to distribute that to a wider setting without it have gone through the formal approval process. That did not mean that some work was not already in place. And so oftentimes when we talk about the COVID-19 vaccine, we say that it was one of the largest clinical trials we ever had. That being said, that's what happened, right? Because we suddenly took something that, again, we knew some of the safety profile, we knew some of how it was behaving in humans, but then we gave it to a lot of humans, right?
Population,
all at
right.
once. And so we're still learning in that process, but it comes mm-hmm. down to that question of risk versus benefit. And this is right. where it gets touchy for me, because you can talk to scientists that would have a completely different view than me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the risk, particularly for some people, were so great in terms of COVID itself.
Mm-hmm.
I felt comfortable enough for what we had learned so far in the safety profile to take that risk. And again, not to get controversial, because people can disagree with me, even now knowing some of the things that we do know with regards to long COVID, with regards to some of the hormonal changes or menstruation changes that we've seen, that I still think that in that moment, my risk versus benefit was, if I have comorbidities, if I have the likelihood that this thing is going to kill me, I'm going to take the vaccine. But that, I think, became a personal choice on top of,
right.
you know, mass, perhaps, I wouldn't call it misinformation, but maybe not complete and balanced information. Mm-hmm. So we didn't just go from the bench and put it in humans. We would never
right.
do
so
that.
So it wasn't as if, oh, my God, there's COVID. We got to develop something. There
right.
was, no, there's COVID. We have some things we've been working
exactly.
on. Maybe these might be an answer.
Right.
And so can we get emergency use for these?
Exactly. Agents that we had out there, they were actually drugs that were repurposed for COVID. So they were being looked at for other indications. And they're like, oh, this will likely work in this case as well. But we did. We had to learn, because we did not have all of that information in that time. And it was risk versus benefit.
We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes, good day. I heard the doc said that they gave it to people to try and see if it'll work. Like, you know, try and see if they're using humans as tests. Tell me if, because right now, hindsight, if you know the COVID vaccine, so-called vaccination, was going to do this to humans, we would never put this inside humans.
Can I ask you a question, sir? Can I ask
go
you
ahead,
a question?
Go ahead.
Did you hear the whole show? Did you hear her whole
yeah,
show?
I listened. And like I said,
okay.
the one thing which stood out
okay,
to me.
Okay, just a minute. So you heard the whole show, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and you heard the various phases that she said you go through, right?
Yes, I heard that.
Did you hear her also say that there are some phases at which then you go to human trials? You heard
yeah.
that, right?
Yeah, right, but guess what? They
okay.
knew this even before, given the testing phase on animals and stuff. They could have seen something was happening, but yet they still went ahead.
How do you know that?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you know that? You hear the lawsuits was coming out nowadays from this?
No, I don't. That's not an answer. I'm asking you, how do you know that?
How do I know that? Because I know.
You are now on the radio,
yeah.
live radio, and you are claiming something. A
yeah,
lawsuit doesn't mean that a thing is true. There are many lawsuits.
Yeah,
President Trump did a lawsuit the other day. He lost it. Some people did a lawsuit against him. They lost it. So the lawsuit doesn't prove anything.
I tell you now how I know.
That's
why I'm challenging you. Even before the doctor talks to you.
Yes, that's all I tell you now. That's how I know. I have a few friends.
I got you. Thanks a lot. I got you.
So one thing I will say to that is, you know, to say that humans are test dummies, I think that we have to be very objective in some of the things. So what I would say is we know the numbers of people that did not have these side effects. No one's it's claiming that it didn't happen, but it's not like we brought, a drug was brought to the market where everybody that gave it was a catastrophic event. These things happen, and we've talked about it, right? You could have a 1% incident rate that happens, and that 1% when you're giving something to billions of people seems exacerbated. And so people also have to look at that in context, that this wasn't just administration of a drug in a small indication where, you know, maybe only 5 out of 10,000 people it happens, but your population for that drug is 1 million. This was a global scale thing. And so even a small percentage of a side effect can seem monumental to some people larger. I think it's often, we have to be careful in calling people test dummies too. Because as I said before, there is a process. Healthy volunteers, and maybe this is good to say, it's a choice that they make to actually enroll in these trials. Nobody goes and, you know, sweeps people off of the street. People are compensated for the work that they're doing, and it's on a volunteer basis. So in early stages, when we are testing on people, it is a choice that they make in the clinical
and
trials.
As was the COVID vaccine, right?
Yes, now, you and could it's say, a choice.
They said, well, if you don't take the vaccine, you can't do this. Well, that's a choice you have to make.
Yes, everything is always a choice. And even when we get into later stages, nobody sits there and say, you have to do this.
Yeah, because a test dummy, brother, is an inanimate thing, right? It don't have no choice. They put it in the car.
Yes.
And it's a inanimate sum, and they crash it. It feels nothing. That's a test dummy. You don't ask a human being, you want to take the vaccine? You want to take the drug? And they say yes. And then you turn around and call them a dummy. That's treating them like they are fools. And I don't think that's fair. We have some more texts here, Doc. This text asks, good afternoon, Mr. Lang and guests. Can the pharmacist or pharmaceutical professional speak to the vaccine that Russia is in its final approval of, if she has any information for cancer?
I do not.
I heard something about it, but I don't know much. Much about it. This says, good day, Lang, to you and your guest. Ain't no way I will take a drug that read side effects possibilities, what might lead to suicide. That drug should be liable, or is it at your own risk to take?
It's a choice. You know, again, that's something that we've talked about. And again, when a doctor diagnoses you with something and they give you the option of drugs, and this is what I say, you're not the expert, but you have a right to ask questions. And if, for me, you know, and suicide is an extreme, and I'm not saying that those things don't happen. There are some drugs that perhaps for some people that can lead to suicidal ideation. So I don't want to minimize that.
Right,
but you
right.
have to weigh the risk. You are also a part of your own healthcare and your decision making. Mm-hmm. And so if they say, you know, I can give you this for the headache, even though your headache's manageable, but this has a side effect that is going to, you know, prevent you from going to work. That's a choice that you have to sit there and be like, I don't think that the risk of this drug is worth that benefit.
That and, for me, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and so what people do when they make certain comments is that they put the onus and the decision-making on someone else. And they're not accepting that you are also a part of what choices you make.
What?
Oh, hello?
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. I keep telling people the great thing is, Who would you rather? This is someone staring you in the face saying, brother, sister, we have this drug. It can have this effect on your disease, this positive effect. Mm-hmm. But it also has this low risk probability of this. Someone who has been absolutely true. Science says this is all possible. And not saying it's abundantly possible, saying that for legality purposes and for transparency purposes, I have to tell you, this is all possible. I mean, that is the most honest, truthful, transparent arrangement you would want in your life, so you can make a good choice for yourself.
That's right.
You don't have to take any drug your doctor prescribes to you. True or not true?
That is true.
Right? So I get diagnosed with prostate cancer. This is something everybody who listens to the show knows. Doc. So I get diagnosed. My doctor told me, Shivago, these are your options. Mm-hmm. And if you do the surgery, these are possibilities you confronted with. If you do the radiation, these are possibilities you confronted with. I ended up doing the surgery and I ended up doing radiation. Mm-hmm. I still have a possibility that I could have a side effect from radiation and the things that I've done. But I made a choice. based on the risk of dying from cancer.
Yeah. And it's funny you said
that's
that.
That's on me.
Yeah. And I was going to give a personal anecdote as well, right? I'm on hypertensive meds. And one of the best right. meds that work for Black people is amlodipine. But one of the things that we know is that it leads to fluid retention, right? Mm-hmm. So knowing that full well, I made the choice, do I want to take this drug and have a risk, which it did happen, and we had to seek alternative treatments, or do I want to end up with a stroke, right? Mm-hmm. So again, it's this whole idea of risk versus benefit. We don't always yep. know side effect profiles, but sometimes when we do, the risk of a stroke was way greater than monitoring fluid retention and then either seeking an alternative treatment or making certain modifications.
And my father suffered a stroke when he was 39 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, it made me listen to Dr. Dwayne Sands when he told me, Shivago, ain't no such thing as a little bit of high blood pressure.
Right.
Not. Right. And so I take the medicine. This text says, I hope your guests can comment on why Tylenol causes autism. As President Trump indicated, the FDA has already initiated the process of updating warning labels about acetaminophen, Tylenol, in September 2025. I heard something about this, but not quite sure about it.
In my best professional words, no comment.
Okay. All right. I know one name, pulling Tylenol out of hospitals. I think as one expert says, that it's a long-term use, situational circumstances use scenario, just as it's almost everything. There are drugs that can be safely taken by a population of people, but not pregnant women.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Can be taken by these people, but not these folks. So, you know, it's understanding the totality of the situation, I think, matters. And I certainly don't understand it, so I'm with you. No comment. This says, Mr. Lang, before the clinical trials, where do they get the approval? I believe your guest didn't mention the IND application process that needs to yes. be approved by the FDA.
Yes. So it's an investigational drug. An IND is an investigational new drug application, and they are correct. So in order for you to go from preclinical into clinical, so that is one roadblock. And thank you, guests, for paying attention in the approval process. They want to make sure that at that point that the drug, you know, in terms of its toxicological profile, that they've looked at it to say, we feel very comfortable that you can then move this drug into humans, and we feel comfortable with the starting doses or the doses that you're going to be using in that trial. So that also, again, even before we get into the human testing, we have to make sure that the regulatory bodies, and I like to say that to be more inclusive, are okay with what we've done with the preclinical data to make sure that moving forward that it is going to be safe in humans. So that's a good point, and I missed that.
Okay. This says, did it mean anything that Fauci was found to have lied and confessed that he made up things in regards to COVID? Do I need to be a pharmacist, a doctor to be aware, or just as informed as anyone seeking knowledge? Is it not true that Big Pharma have been found to have lied about and misrepresented thousands of drug tests over the years?
That is a personal choice. There are a lot of emotions, I think, behind a lot of what people feel. And we're not all going to be professionals. I will say this. I am not a professional as an electrician. I can't do automotive work. But I know the questions to ask to make me feel better about the decisions that I'm going to make. I'm not going to comment on Fauci. That's from a professional standpoint. I don't have an opinion on that. But my opinion on a lot of these things is simply going to be, you don't have to be an expert, but you can ask questions. If your doctor wants to put you on a medication, you can ask, what are the side effects? If I don't go on this drug, what is the likelihood of this progressing? What is the likelihood of my symptoms being worse than what the side effect is? Nobody is ever going to force you to do anything. And so the best thing I could tell you is be informed. One thing I will caution, though, is that we now live in a world where we can create echo chambers for ourselves. And what I mean by that is, the news and the information that I get can be reinforced by just oh, if I see this one thing and I start looking at it, over time, those are the things that are going to be reinforced maybe in my news feed. And so we have to be careful to become myopic in things that we see, because echo chambers are very easy with social media. Echo chambers are really easy with, whether it is even Wikipedia, where we're getting information that's not being fully vetted. And so it's good to be your own advocate, but be it in a very cautious and informed way to make sure that you are getting a balanced view on some of these very touchy and controversial issues.
Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. But I think too, like I read this note, and you know the truth is we have to also be careful the words we use. Mm-hmm. Dr. Fauci never confessed to lying. That's not true. Lying means that I am going to tell you something false that I know to be false. What Dr. Fauci did say was some of the things that were being said in respect of the pandemic was not based on science at the time. That's not lying. That's different, right? A lie says, you know, I know this isn't true, but I'm going to tell you it anyways. Okay, and so I agree with you. We can get emotionally tied up in these issues, and then we want to now impose on them that we have to be careful about, right? If you want to criticize Dr. Fauci and those, that's fine. But I don't think we should be about the business of talking about lying. Are there thousands of drug tests that the big pharma lied about? Well, you're the one making the statement. Where's your evidence of that? Right. This is on this show, Doc. This is my tenor. I tell people, you don't get to just go and spout off things here without evidence.
Yeah.
Because that's irresponsible. So you do it elsewhere, but you're not going to do it out here. So science exists to prove science wrong. It implies that science itself can be wrong. No, science doesn't exist to prove science wrong. That's not true. Science exists to discover how the world works and the things in it. But in the process of that discovery, science requires that you have a hypothesis tested. And in that testing, you can find that this theory of the case, et cetera, could be wrong and so forth. So science is ever trying to improve itself.
Exactly.
But it doesn't exist to prove things wrong. And your doc, you're a scientist, but understanding.
Absolutely. And as a tangent to that, right? Science is based on data. So, you know, I often tell people as a scientist, I'll tell you how data comes about that then changes that theory. And I think that that's very difficult for an everyday person to understand, because as a society, as human beings, we want surety. We want, if you're telling me this is what it is. But science is based on data and information. Mm-hmm. And as we get information, those things change. It doesn't mean that we lied. It doesn't mean that we were wrong. It doesn't mean that we didn't know what we were talking about. It was just based on the evidence and the information at that time. That is the conclusion that we can make. But I get that that's a hard spot for some people to be in, that want mm-hmm. an absolute.
Sure. It's like saying my teacher didn't lie to me. So what do you mean? Well, when we were in primary school, teacher said you couldn't take a big number from a small number. That's what they teach you.
Yeah.
You can't take a big number from a small number. You can only take a small number from big. Then you get to high school and they say, of course you can take a big number from a small number and end up with a negative number.
Yeah.
Right? So did they lie to me in primary school? No, they were trying to give me a process to teach me that was simpler for me. All right. And so I understand where folks are at. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes. Pertaining to what you and Doc said earlier, right? But it's a choice. We all know it's a choice. But when the government could come out and say, okay, you have to have the vaccine, so-called vaccine, before I give you a government job, i.e. join the police force, defense force, customs, immigration, whatever, you got to be vaccinated. That's not a choice.
Of course, it's a choice. You don't have to have that job. You don't have to.
But you hear me out. We know in this country.
No. I want you to hear me out. You do not have to have a job you're applying for.
Boy, guess what? There's really a play on words, right? But we know.
No. I'm not going to let you do that. Do you have to have a job you are applying for?
to apply for a job that desperate and desperate need, and in this country, you
know, no, you're creating a scenario. Desperation doesn't mean that you don't have a choice, right? That's like telling me, because so when the person who is desperately ill from COVID now needs that treatment, that people are saying, or their family members feel desperate about not getting COVID because they are high risk for it, and they take it, you're saying to me they didn't have a choice in taking it then, so what's good for the goose is good for the gander. You always have a choice. The only question is whether you're prepared to suffer the consequences of your choice, but don't say you don't have a choice. We always have a choice. But to say that doesn't work for your narrative, because you need now to say people are forcing you to do something, and that's just a lie. You're not being forced to do anything. You're making choices.
I told you this was controversial.
No, we understand it. That's why I'm least leaving you out of it.
Thank you.
We have another call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Good afternoon, Shavar.
Go ahead, caller. Yes, hi.
And good afternoon to you guys.
Hi. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so first of all, I want to congratulate you on a good show. I actually met your guest, I was leaving the previous show. And so I'm really happy to see our Bahamians doing a lot of big things out there.
Absolutely,
We definitely want to bring her back to one of our public forums and one of our educational forums. I think she's really brought a bright light to a lot of things.
And it takes
all of us to help build up what we're doing in the country. As it relates to some of these other stuff, you know, Shivago, at the end of the day, people have their own agendas, and they want to have and promote the things that they feel. And I think that issue, that point of an echo chamber, is critical. Coming to it with an open mind to find the conclusion, rather than having a conclusion and trying to find something to prove it.
Right.
And that's really critical. I've taken a lot of heat because, you know, when COVID came and we were talking about the vaccines, I was on Guardian Radio a lot. It took a lot of heat from people. Oh, are you trying to just promote Big Pharma and this and that? But at the end of the day, the data has shown us that the prevailing number of people who took the vaccine were protected and have been safe and don't have a lot of the quote-unquote adverse effects that some of these people are promoting. And so at the end of the day, you know, we want to make sure that we're making decisions as a country based on intelligent data and based on an evaluation of what it is that we can actually see and prove, and it's feasible. And that's not just with science. That's with everything else. So, you know, I want to commend her. Don't worry about being controversial. Certain people will always believe what they believe, and you can't move them from that. Okay? We got a group in this country called Dolphin Fans, and they still in 1972. So, you know, that's how
she don't need my protection, but at least on this show, I got that part of it. I'm gonna keep her in that same wonderful zone where she's informing and educating us.
Yes. So thank you so much for a good show. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate it. This Texas, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. To the caller about test dummies, is a doll in the shape of a human with sensors for crash testing? They're saying it's a doll in the shape of a human for crash testing. That's what it's created for. It says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. Does your guest have a view on the usefulness of having all of those ads for prescription drugs on TV? I always wonder whether they're marketing those drugs to the public, and if so, why? Why not market them to the doctors directly in the medical journals or wherever they get their information? That's interesting.
So I'll speak a little bit kind of tangential to it. So they do market to doctors. And that is by way of pharmaceutical reps, right? And so you have people that go to different doctors' offices or institutions, and they talk to them. When a new drug comes out, they will give them information on it. And so a lot of you will probably notice when you go to your doctor's office, and I don't mean this in, again, a controversial way, they might say, hey, you have this one thing, this new drug just came out, and we have some samples and you can try. So they don't just market on TV. And to your point, you know, you're doing that, I can't get it. But it gives you an opportunity to say, hey, well, I heard this new drug is out there. Perhaps what wasn't working for me, is this something I can try? It's still a conversation at the end of the day that you have with a doctor, but that's not the only way in which new drugs are disseminated in terms of informing the public or medical professionals that those are available. So it's just one that you see, because most people are not going to see pharmaceutical reps going in to speak with their doctors.
Yeah, and a part of marketing is to make the audience of users are knowledgeable too, because as you said, we can be our own advocates, and so sometimes a doctor may not have heard, and then you get to say, well, but what about this? I heard about that, right?
Yes.
We have some additional text here. Says, my doctor told me during pregnancy that Tylenol, though posing some risk, was the safest of all the drugs that I used, and it would be the only one she would prescribe and not pose more risk to me and baby. So informed choices should be the only option. That's well said. Mm-hmm. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
So small countries like the Bahamas, where more often than not, I think we have a drug council, right, that may be involved with issuing maybe pharmaceutical licenses and stuff like that. But I mean, we are more often than not subject to the regulatory operations of these larger territories, no?
That is a good question. The FDA governs what they govern. The EMA governs what they govern for their people. I personally, and this is something, right, I've been in drug development for a while, and I haven't really understood our landscape. And to your point, we do have the Pharmacy Council. But outside of that, understanding our inherent regulations or whether we even fully have them is one that I'm still trying to figure out. But to be honest with you, that's something that you should be doing, because all of these regulatory bodies are looking out for themselves. One of the interesting things that we're also starting to see a little bit more on a global scale are, again, I'm going to go back to LMICs, lower middle income countries. And we're kind of this unique thing. You're more on the con side, so you can, you know, tease it out better. But a lot of these, what people call so-called developing countries, are realizing that they have to be mindful of their people, right? So, you know, places like in Nigeria, you know, where they're putting together their bodies to make sure that even though it's approved by the FDA, even though it's what is coming into our country, is safe for our people and we feel comfortable with it. And that could be by way of brand name drugs. That could be by way of generics. Where are you getting your drugs from? Are we doing our due diligence? And it's hard for me to speak on that, because it's something I've been trying to figure out as well, how we're doing that. What are the expertise behind the people that are doing it? Now, again, I don't know either way. But if we're not doing it, it's something that we really should be thinking about.
But it matters, because I could tell you, this is only anecdotal. I had an experience with hemorrhoids, right? Mm-hmm. And I took some medication, you know, the cream and whatever you have, and I got it at the from our ass stores, right? Now, at the time, I mean, I was not getting any relief. But at the time, I flew to Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And they had some cream over the counter. And let me tell you something. I thought I had just run into the most miracle drug on planet Earth.
Yes.
And I have heard from people that they will actually order stuff from Europe because they feel like there is maybe a higher standard. I'm only saying what they say about how the drugs come to market. But there are differences. Yes. In terms of how each territory may evaluate drugs that come to market, no?
That is correct. So that's what we talk about, regulatory bodies. You can have a drug that might be approved in the EU that's not approved in America, and vice versa, right? Because they have their unique bodies. We don't have kind of the infrastructure or even the population to say that we're going to do our own trials and bring our own drugs into market, but we can have a say in what we allow into the country, when and why and how. And we can also have a say in making sure that the things that are coming in are so we're always going to defer to bringing in drugs likely that have been approved in other countries. Right. But what are we doing to make sure that we are okay with those specific types of drugs being in our country? And I can't really speak to that well as it pertains to the Bahamas at this time, unfortunately.
More like a relationship management versus simple deferral.
Yeah.
So maybe I have a relationship with those entities that have me in a dialogue saying, why are you okay with this? Can you share with us some information in relation to that? And then I say, okay, good. We can take that. We can take that in our marketplace. Or no, we can't take that in our marketplace, as opposed to, oh, but they approved it, so it must be okay.
Yeah. And I think there might be some things in the work with better regulation. It's just not things that I'm privy to.
Or me. I don't know either. This text says, good day, Mr. Lang, and thanks for allowing the doctor on your show today. Please have her come on your show regularly or at least twice a month to highlight these important health news. Thanks, Dr. Morris and Mr. Lang. I agree with you. I'd have you come on as often as you want, but I know you're busy and I know you're doing stuff.
Yeah.
You have a program that you're also involved. Is it?
Oh, we're just losing him.
Kind of program?
Yes. Yeah, so I actually started a collective, and this I started in May. So I spent a lot of years in drug development as a consultant, working in pharmaceutical companies. And 2 years ago, I started my own business, which is called Emerald City Pharma Consulting. And I also started a Bahamian branch of that called Turquoise Isle Consulting. And it's, again, doing exactly what I'm doing. It's education. It's, also helping people with different elements of clinical trials. We do some clinical trials here. And like I said, I think that there's certain things that are in the works that perhaps will be coming. But the idea was to be at the forefront on what the Bahamas could do. And I happened to be here for, I think, a meeting. It was in April. And there were a lot of things that I was like, we perhaps can be looking at things a little bit differently. And that was because I was interacting with a lot of women, particularly in the healthcare space, that were entrepreneurs that were trying to look for ways to give back and be involved. Most of them foreign trained, either back home or trying to find a leg back home and reaching roadblocks. And I started to see some of that. Well, how do we make this a little bit different? And that's why I started the IABA Collective. And so
that's right. It's IABA, A-Y-A-B-A Collective.
Yes. And it's Yoruba for queen or royalty or kingdom. Right. And the idea is to bring together female entrepreneurs in the Bahamas that are in the healthcare space. So whether that's like clinical, pharmaceutical, right now I'm an N of one, but I know there are more of us out there that come together and are shared resources. So it's a formal network. It's not a business in its own, but it's a formal network specifically for female entrepreneurs. And that's where we not only share ideas, but we can, if there's a proposal out there, or if there's some initiative out there that we feel that one of us might be able to benefit or contribute to, that we're having those conversations. And the other part of it is tied to what you allowed me to do today. And that's education, but also being forward thinking and being the people that allow diversity of thought to shine through, right? And where we're going to see that is not necessarily going to be with our older people and people like myself that are set in our ways, right? And we believe that this is how the world was and this is how the world should be. We have a younger generation that's coming up, that they're coming up in an era of lots of change and lots of movements and finding better ways to prepare them. I was able to come upon my career path by accident. I would like to have more Bahamians coming across amazing career paths by choice. And the only way that we can do that is by educating them as young as possible. So there is an entrepreneurial aspect to it, because we want to get together and we, of course, want to run a business and be successful, but looking for women who also want to give back and be the change makers. And then also support each other instead of kind of you know, I've said this before, having a scarcity mindset of thinking that there's not enough space for us. I think there's enough space for all of us.
My name, Mado. Because it's just for women. I mean, like, you know, we may have some guys who have some ideas in the pharmaceutical or the space and say, you know, my, what about me? Can you help me?
Yes. And you know what? I, like I said, there's enough to go around. And so when you think of a collective, it's something that's small. It's, you know, there's two of us right now. But at most for this particular collective, it will be anywhere from 5 to 7. You don't want it to be big. So if this is something right. that is exciting to somebody else, start your own. I really believe that we are here to educate people and help them be better. If that means that you start a collective of your own, that is good. Then collectives can work with collectives, right? So part of that is just really being intentional to make sure that we can be successful in what we're doing, that we don't get sidetracked, you know, when you get too big. Yeah. So, yeah.
And also, so for you, from in terms of your own expertise, suppose there's a Bahamian out there who says, you know, I think this thing that I have been working with may be able to be developed into a drug to attack high blood pressure or something better than what we have there. Is that something they can come to you and provide, you can provide consulting services on? I mean, paid consulting services.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And fair wage paid consulting services.
Paid consulting. You heard what Chivago said on Z Live, right? Paid consulting services.
That is actually what I do. So right now, currently, and you know, mainly with my U.S. affiliate, which is Emerald City Pharma Consultant, ecpcglobal.com. I work with biotechs primarily because they're the ones that need this expertise. A lot of pharmaceutical companies will have experts like me on staff. But when you're a biotech company, maybe 11 people trying to bring a drug to market, you don't have all of the experts in-house, and so you're looking for ways to outsource it, but you're also looking for people that can help you to strategically think through what it is you're going to do and when you're going to. That is exactly what I do. And that is specifically in the space of the clinical pharmacology or the dose selection, if you will, for people that are out there that are knowledgeable in the space. It's in relation to dose selection.
Okay. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes, good afternoon, Brother Lang, and to your guest, your wonderful guest. I always love a chemist, but I have a question to pose, as you know, it relates to something with Lang poses the question, which is hemorrhoidal medicine or whatever, and inferiority and superiority to products according to where they are. But I've read enough to know that the Food and Drug Administration don't have the staff or the time to even go to clinical trials submitted to them. They just go based on what is submitted to them by these companies, right? Given the power of the pharmaceutical companies. My question to you, as opposed to us here in the third world and our country, I knew about chromatography, which was it comes a long way, mm-hmm. you know, paper chromatography and chemistry, to do the analytics on chemical constituents or something mm-hmm. to see what's the level, like you said, the micrograms, given the fact that there were disparities in the micrograms of different adjuvants and from different vaccines, et cetera. So, I mean, even as products and it relates to human consumption of anything. And I would like to know what is our, like here, because I've been asking, given that they want to implement cannabis legislation and cannabis and, you know, that they grow it hydroponically, et cetera, I was trying to stress the significance of a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer. I couldn't get anybody here in this country to find out if we're actually doing that particular method of chromatography as in juxtaposing to what Lang is saying, as it relates to what we are putting into our bodies, do we? I really would like for somebody who well versed like at O level or A level, and just explain that the other products we're taking safe, and they, if they do contain the chemical constituents and ingredients that people said they are, because common sense can tell you the Food and Drug Administration don't have the time, the armamentarium, whatever, to go into all these studies and actually do what to prove what you know what's there, even when they approve it. And I've read this and I'm knowing this.
Good question. Good question. We run out of time, so let's give her an opportunity to answer. Thanks a lot, 52.
So I won't speak to the chemical side of things, you know, not as a chemist. So when you submit a drug, you're going to have to submit information in terms of the bioanalytical aspects of that drug. You're going to have to submit information in terms of chemistry, manufacturing, and controls. And so to your point, as a government entity outside of the FDA, valid enough question of, is what we're getting actually what we're supposed to get? Now, whether or not it's something to invest in is really hard for me to say. But technically, those types of studies are done by the pharmaceutical companies. And yes, you are assuming that what they are submitting to you is correct. We do still have audits of companies to look at certain things, even when companies are using regulatory laboratories at labs to do some of this work, they audit them as well. So they're still, even though we might not be able to catch everything, there's no way that you're going to be able to recreate every clinical trial, every test for every drug. We would need a lot of people to do it, but those institutions also should and do have checks and balances to make sure that what they're saying is the case. With that being said, though, sometimes we do have audits where you find out that things are falsified. Sometimes you do have audits where perhaps you find something that maybe is off, right? That maybe you have to stop a trial because you're not getting the potency or the purity that you want in any industry that you will. That checks and balances are there to catch some of these things. But I think it would be very difficult. I think it is a good thing that maybe there are some things that you can do for quality control, but I don't think you would have the manpower or the wit to do it across the board. And also, there are different analytical techniques that are used for some of these drugs. They're not all going to be analyzed by the same method as well. So when you get into some of those things, it becomes complicated, right? HPLC versus ELISA. There are different mechanisms. There are different types of instruments. These all have validated assays to be able to measure them. It's not just something easy that you can just go and reproduce. It takes money and it takes time as well.
Doc, you got to come back. You got to come back. Oh, you got to come back. So stay tuned. As long as you're available, we're going to have you back. But I want to thank you so much today for sharing so much and helping us all be better able to understand
how my this pleasure.
Business works. Again, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You've been listening to Z Live, and we have been here speaking with Dr. Denise Morris, pharmaceutical expert, and so delighted. You'll hear from her again. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you so much, Shafaga. Have a great day.
You too. Ladies and gentlemen, God spares life. We'll be back with you again tomorrow. Have a great evening.